John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
And it's always great to catch up with Sean Salisbury on the Venue Kings hotline for a chance to do some four downs. And Sean, are you kind of misty-eyed? Because I am today. And the reason I'm misty-eyed, today officially is the last day of unrestricted free agency. Even though you can sign the same players tomorrow, they count as street free agents. So 168 players have signed. I'm a little teary-eyed. This is, of course, the last day of unrestricted free agency.
I'm so glad, Johnny, that you have some good sarcasm still in there, that you still carry it around, because I couldn't be more happy that we're moving. I hope the players that are unsigned get signed. But guess what? It's time to move to the next level, and that isn't free agency. I'm glad we're at the next level. So no misty eye here. But maybe I'm misty eyed because we don't get to see Jason Witten anymore as a tight end, but he'll do well in Monday Night Football, one of the class guys in the league.
Oh, yeah, no question. How do you think he's going to do in the broadcasting booth?
You know, John, you know him. I've known him forever. I think there's no better guy we have in football. He's just such a class guy, great leader, great teammate. I think the X's and O's stuff, I think he'll do great because he knows football. Heck, what coverage hasn't he seen? He's played with, you know, some good football players. He's seen good football players play against him, so he knows it. But as you know, it's not like a Sunday afternoon game when there's a whole bunch of them on and you're just basically, you're not really an entertainer. You're describing the action and breaking it down and talking to people. This goes to a different level where you got to be an entertainer on Monday Night Football, not just X's and O's, but there's got to be a combination of both. You can't be too entertainment. You can't be too hardcore X's and O's. There's a fine line. I don't know that part. I know that he is a great guy, and I think he'll do well, but I'm anxious to see how entertaining he is and, you know, energetic and all those things that we really don't know about him because he's a fairly guarded guy. But the X's and O's stuff will be fine. I'm anxious to see how he is entertainment-wise.
Well, let's entertain ourselves today with four downs.
All right, gentlemen, we haven't had you two together since the draft. First up, which of the quarterbacks taken in the draft will we see start first?
Oh, I think I would say that by the middle of the season, the three or four of them are going to be the full-time starters. I quite frankly, the more I go on about it, as much as I think that Josh McCown's one of the great pros we have, I think Darnold's going to start from the beginning. I think they're going to go, and he's going to have Josh McCown there to teach him, who's just a great guy, a true pro. I don't have any doubt that Josh Allen can go beat A.J. McCarron out. There's nothing that A.J. McCarron's done that tells me he can stave him off, even though Allen's got a lot to learn. Tyrod Taylor's probably going to hold it down early, I guess. I don't know Sam Bradford, if he gets hurt one day, if he can stave it off. I expect four of them to start by week eight. I expect three of them to start in the first month, and I expect two or three of them possibly to start when we open up. I'm going to go Darnold. I think the New York Jets are ready to make that, and I think they know that Josh McCown's a great teacher, but Sam Darnold's just a better football player, and why not let him grow? That's how you get better. You play.
I'm going to go with Josh Rosen because I think that the thinking by Buffalo is that, and the same thing I think with the Jets. I mean, the two guys that are going to be the fastest on the field are going to be Baker Mayfield and Josh Rosen. Oh, yeah, so Arizona, I think, can really get him on a little bit quicker. But, you know, do you do it with Sam Bradford? I think that's a little debatable. But I think that, you know, Rosen's the guy that of the four quarterbacks I think can get to the field the fastest, and I don't think they're going to waste any time. We still don't know with Bradford how that knee's going to be. We know that Mike Zimmer says it's degenerated and all that. I think that Darnold's probably going to be the third one because, you know, there's no need to rush him. But again, you know he's going to be good. I still think, like you do, he's the best quarterback in this draft. That's why I'm still shaking my head that they took Baker Mayfield in Cleveland over him, because you wanted the bigger, stronger arm guy. And now you all of a sudden are sitting there at number one and you take the 6-foot guy. Sure. But I think Rosen has the chance to be out there the fastest.
All right, you mentioned Sam Darnold in the last question. Jets CEO Christopher Johnson said Darnold will lead them to greatness, and people are going to look back 20 years from now and say this is the moment the Jets shifted into a new year and that they became a great team. Do you buy that, and is this an unfair amount of pressure to place on Darnold?
Sure it is, but you're a quarterback, and yes, I do buy it. And a lot of it could be hyperbole. That's how owners talk when in front office people talk when you draft a guy. That's your investment, your guy, and you should think of him like that. What do you have to lose? If it doesn't work out, then you say, well, we teed up and do it again. So I personally don't see why not. There's no glaring weakness in his game, and I don't want to hear about the turnovers. Matt Ryan, 19 turnovers his last year. Did you see the money he just made? When I hear people say, oh, the turnovers, they saw it on SportsCenter and decided, well, I saw him play five highlights on SportsCenter. Yeah, he turned it over. He can fix that. The stuff that you can't fix, he's got, and you don't need to fix. I think he's going to be a full-on superstar. He'll be the best now. Maybe not the most impactful, because we know what Joe Namath meant to the Jets and to the NFL. Sam Darnold, numbers-wise and rest of it, Sam Darnold will be the best quarterback in New York Jets history, period. And he will give them a chance. When Brady leaves, who's next? Who's next in the division? Hell, 2 years from now, Brady retires, Sam Darnold will be the best quarterback in the division. Why not the Jets? To me, yes, couldn't agree more. I think he's going to be special, and I not only think the Browns screwed it up, as much as I like Baker Mayfield and as much as I like Saquon Barkley, two teams passed on the best quarterback in this draft. That tells you something. The Jets finally made a better move in the draft and made a better move in New York than the Giants did.
I can't believe that you're projecting Sam Darnold is going to be better than Ken O'Brien. I just can't believe it.
Yeah. And you are too.
I don't know. I think you know he has a way to go to before he passes Joe Namath. But you know Darnold to me just I just see great success with him. That's why you know all of a sudden if you're the Jets you got to feel lucky. I mean all of a sudden this guy you know drops down to you after you gave 3 second round picks and you were getting criticized for getting 3 second round picks for Baker Mayfield. And I think Mayfield's going to have a fine career. I just think Darnold's going to be the best
too.
Of the group. But just like you know what I like is, you know, you still don't have to rush him. Sure. I mean, this is Josh McCown, and he was lucky last year. He was able to stay as healthy as he is, but you know his history. His history is he's older, what, he's going to be 37, 38 years old, and he's injury prone. And so, you know, he'll get a chance to go on there. That's why I still think that maybe, you know, they'll rush Rosen a little bit more because I think that they can do it. But no, I think Darnold's going to be really, really good. CEO maybe, and again, remember, this isn't Woody Johnson. He's, you know, being an ambassador right now, so this is his brother. So I don't know. Is he really football savvy or not? But I think in this case, he's right.
With Ben Roethlisberger's comments that the team should not have used a third-round pick on Mason Rudolph, and adding that if Rudolph asks him a question, he might just have to point to the playbook, I want to know what you guys think the starting quarterback's responsibilities are in working with the other quarterbacks.
Well, you mentioned, and you cut out a second, but you're talking about Ben Roethlisberger with Mason Rudolph, correct?
Yes. What do you think the starting quarterback's responsibilities are in working with the other quarterbacks?
To win. Yeah, and I apologize. To win. His job, he's not, Ben, isn't it amazing what a little motivation does when you draft somebody? Wasn't Ben the same guy? Ben loves drama. And Ben loves to be a little bit catty and petty, and I'm a huge fan. He'll probably have an MVP-type season. Look what happens when you bring somebody in. Ben last year was talking about retiring. Now he wants to play 4 more years. I wonder how that worked and how that motivation all of a sudden crept up. It's because they drafted somebody high enough that kind of looks like him. Big, strong thrower. And Ben now has a team that he can get to the Super Bowl. But his responsibility, where I do agree with him, he's not supposed to seek out Mason Rudolph. It's Mason Rudolph's job to seek out him. I remember in Seattle when I was there and David Craig was a quarterback. Dave didn't come find me. I followed him around like a baby duck following a mother duck around trying to get information from him and Largent and Kenny Easley. In fact, I drove those guys nuts trying to get information from them about football, sitting in the sauna. I did. And it wasn't Dave's job to train me. It was Dave's job to win games for the Seahawks, just like it's Ben Roethlisberger's job to win and do the best that he can for his Pittsburgh Steelers. It's Mason Rudolph's job to seek him out and see if he can shadow him and ask questions. Now, I don't like Ben when he says if he asks him a question, so he points to the playbook and says, get Matt. It's a legitimate answer. But I don't think it's going to be like that. In the meeting room, you want a comfortable meeting room. It's okay to be competitive, but it's amazing what a little motivation will do, John. But the responsibility doesn't fall on a starting superstar Hall of Fame quarterback to train the backup. Maybe watch how he works and how he goes about his business. Now, Josh McCown's different. He's not a superstar. He's at the very end. He's not going to play 4 more years. That's a different narrative. This, it's Mason Rudolph's job to seek out Ben Roethlisberger.
Yeah, no, I think that, you know, Ben is a drama queen. There's no question about it. I mean, he does that all the time. And I think that, you know, this is his teammate. You need to treat him a little bit better than what he's saying. But no, again, that's why you have quarterback coaches. Quarterback coaches coach up the quarterbacks, and Ben's concentration has to be on getting 30 points a game out of that offense. Throwing that all together, I think if you're in Pittsburgh, what you got to feel good about is the fact that now you've got a quarterback in Ben that wants to play and is going to be motivated for 3 years. That's good news.
The latest word from Russell Wilson's camp is that they are prepared to take the franchise tag twice, just like Kirk Cousins, if they don't get the deal he wants next year with the Seahawks. Is there any possibility Wilson ends up elsewhere before his next deal?
I can't fathom that you want to let that guy get away, especially with the way now the other side is. Well, they're kind of in a rebuilding mode, and this isn't the same Seahawks team, but isn't he the biggest glue that keeps it together right now? Good gracious. But we know the money situation, and I guess this season will have a lot to do with that. But tell you, I can see him franchising, and I can see him accepting it. He puts you in the five highest paid players, and Russell Wilson's really good at gambling on his game, meaning he'll go up and show up and put numbers up, and I do like that. I think he believes that he can put not only numbers but wins up and carry a team. But I personally, judging from what I see in the landscape of the NFL, looking at who's going to be a free agent, what do the future drafts look like? And there's always somebody who ends up being a great player or two at quarterback. But I don't risk that. This guy's still plenty of years left on him. You got to build around him. But remember, when you pay somebody so much money, it's tough to build the parts around him. And I think that's what Seattle's going to be faced with. But they're talking about the best glue they have right now, place quarterback. I can't afford to let him get away. But you know, that's why we have the franchise tag. Some people got to live with it. It may not make you happy, but it's part of the rules right now, and both sides will deal with it if that's the case. You can't let him just walk.
It'd be the dumbest business decision by Russell Wilson's agent to do something like that that you can imagine.
Amen.
Because think about how dumb this is. Matt Ryan got a $46.5 million signing bonus. If Russell Wilson takes the franchise tag for 2 years, it's going to be a $25 and $30 million. I mean, that's $55 million till 2021 when, you know, he can probably get all that in 1 year. That's bad business. And if that's what he's going to try to do to angle to get some big deal down the line, fine. I'm sure Seattle wouldn't like it, but they just franchise him for 2 years and that's it. Crazy.
Yeah, I don't think so. Yeah, John, real quick, I don't think it would be a horrible business decision when you look at the landscape of what the Garoppolos and the Matt Ryans, what Aaron Rodgers is going to go get. Don't give that money away. But, you know, I could see a crazy scenario playing out, but I think Russell Wilson holds more cards than the Seahawks do in his situation.
Yeah, but again, ultimately, it's best to get the deal done, and I would have to think next year they'll start negotiating. Hey, Sean, always great to catch up with you on the Venue Kings Hotline. Looking forward to talking to you later this week.
Can't wait, Johnny. Thank you, guys.
Okay, Sean Salisbury joining us for Four Downs, and of course, you can check out the show on the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer, and of course, don't forget the Mariners are in Toronto to face the Blue Jays this afternoon. Pre-game starts at 3, game time at 4:07. Coming up next, we'll do the report card. Get your grade books out right now. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
It's time for The Report Card with The Professor.
Yeah, professor. Time. We go ahead and try to give you some grades on some of the good, the bad, the smart, the dumb, the crazy, the wacky, the sane, all those different things that are going on in sports, whether it's going to be basketball, whether it's going to be hockey, whether it's going to be the NBA, whatever it's going to be. We try to give some grades to some of the wacky stuff going on. And, of course, Mara, what do we start off with?
Well, yesterday was the big Met Gala that they do every year, and it's a kind of a place to see and be seen, and the fashion is kind of crazy. And Giselle and Tom Brady were there. This is her post on Instagram.
Hello everyone, we are almost arriving at the Met, and do you want to see my cute date? There he is. What a cutie. Isn't he a cutie, guys?
Stop.
Seriously.
Anyways, Brady showed up in a all-black suit with this weird, like, gold embroidery on the lapel and a black turtleneck. And he took some heat on social media. I think Mina Kimes said something about him looking like a magician. Bill Barnwell said Steven Seagal. He looked like a villain in a bad, cheesy movie.
Well, let's put it this way. I mean, when all of a sudden you start to dress worse than Danny O'Neill going to a Friday baseball game, then you know you're in trouble, right? I mean, Danny O'Neill got dressed up like Princess Leia and looked really bad. And this outfit looked bad. And that spot, I mean, I'm still, my stomach is still turning from listening to that spot, listening to Giselle talking about cutie and all. Oh, jeez. It's like, ugh. I mean, so this one, I'm going to go D minus. I mean, the outfit's bad. And, you know, I know that you see with some of his commercials, you know, like, Tom wants to dress up almost like, I don't know, James Bond or something like that in some of these, but this one just looks so weird and so different. And again, you know, it's like if Tom Brady, you know, you're 40, going on 41 years old, I mean, you're the best quarterback who's ever played the game, I mean, go for some jeans or something like that. It's like you don't have to get dressed up and be as crazy as that. So I don't know. Did you like the outfit at all?
I did not. But, you know, he does have a wife that's a supermodel, so
right.
He has to, I'm sure he's wearing some designer that she wanted him to wear.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I guess that's the case. But, man, that one, that's not looking good.
All right, next up we have the Raptors getting swept by the Cavs last night. This was Coach Dwayne Casey postgame.
That's a big part of it. I mean, you know, that's a big part of it. You know, you're looking at probably one of the guys that's going to go down as one of the greatest ever. And, you know, it's a matchup nightmare for anybody. And I think anybody who's played against him will see that. But at some point, that's going to come down. That's going to change. You know, we've seen it all. We've seen it with Michael. We've seen it with Kobe. We've seen it a lot of great players. And we want to be the one, Toronto organization wants to be the one who knocks that gate down. For whatever reason, we got the unlucky draw every year of going against them. But, you know, it's going to come a time when that gauntlet is going to come down. And why not us?
Maybe I'm misinterpreting, Professor, but I kind of feel like he's saying, we're just waiting till LeBron gets a little bit older and more tired,
mm-hmm.
and then it's going to be our time.
I know. Don't like that strategy, and I'm worried for Dwayne, because, I mean, Dwayne's such a good guy. He's done such a great job during the regular season, but it was a zero for him in this playoff series. I mean, no wins, four-game sweep. He got out-coached. His players got outplayed, and, you know, you can see, even though they got him in the regular season, they got the Cavs, because the Cavs only had, 48 wins, and Toronto was the number one seed. I mean, they just blew it in the playoffs. I worry that even though he's probably going to be voted Coach of the Year, the Casey could get fired. And so I guess out of sympathy for that post game, I'm going to give him a C, when probably it should be a D, because again, the tactic of, oh yeah, maybe we'll be okay, everything's going to be great when LeBron retires. Well, guess what? He's going to be playing. He may not be playing for Cleveland next year, but yeah, it's like, get the most out of your team. If your team was good enough as it was to be able to win all the games that they did, you know, to take advantage of that in the playoffs, they didn't. I worry. I give a C.
Well, and even if LeBron goes elsewhere, I think the Celtics are probably the next team up in that division. In that conference, not them.
Yeah, yeah. So, as the Celtics right now, it's like, okay, are they going to, 2 years from now, have a Dwayne Casey press conference saying, well, you know, when these players from Boston get a little bit older, maybe we'll have a chance. By that time, I mean, he'll have no team.
Yeah. I don't think that's exactly what he was going for. He said for whatever reason, that, you know, but I think it kind of sounded like maybe once LeBron falls off a little bit. next up, John, I have a stat from Warren Sharp, who we're going to talk to on the podcast next week. He's an analytics guy that crunches a lot of numbers, and he took a look at the Vegas books so far. And he said Seattle has been favored in 9-plus games every regular season since they drafted Russell Wilson. This year, they're only favored in 3 games.
Hmm. I don't know. I mean, I saw different odds on that one. But, you know, I guess you can see that, again, the nation's view of this team is going to be a little bit less. I mean, I have to think that they can't be. I guess if Vegas is saying that, then they're supposed to lose twice to San Francisco. Yeah, interesting analytics. But again, that's where I think they'll reverse things and get to the 9 wins, because, you know, as you've seen with Andrew Luck, if Andrew Luck is playing and healthy in Indianapolis, they win 8 or 9 games. If Drew Brees is healthy in New Orleans and they have a bad team, you win 7 or 8 games. In this case, it's not a bad team. You still have, you know, 3 Pro Bowlers on defense. You still have Doug Baldwin on offense. I mean, you have a different scheme. You now have, you know, a first-round running back. I still think it can be 9, but again, the odds are going to change. And, you know, and how about how bad the networks would look if that's the case? Because remember, the networks came back and gave 3 December games to Seattle on prime time. I mean, they believe in this team. A lot of people don't right now. I'm not going to be that drastic. So I guess, you know, I'll have to give a C- on that grade.
Yeah, according to this, it has them favored against the Cowboys, 49ers, and Chiefs at home. There's a couple. It looks like they're pretty much even with the Bears and the Cardinals. I mean, I can't. I would not.
I can't.
I would pick them against the Bears for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, come on. I mean, there's a 5-win team with a young quarterback in week 2 on a Monday night.
Although I know Vegas does crunch a lot of numbers to figure this stuff out, but they're not always right.
Nope. And again, it depends on what book you're looking at, because I'm sure, I mean, I saw other books. I mean, I saw one book that had Seattle at 9.5.
Oh, yeah, that's a big difference then.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, that's a very big difference. So, C-minus on that one book. But, again, good stats always crunched, and we always like those. Hey, you can check out the show in the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, we will take your text questions. So text away at 710-710. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app.
Well, NBA season's really starting to get some focus right now, looking at some interesting conference championship games. And, of course, Mariners started a big 7-game road trip going to 3 different cities, including Minnesota. And, of course, the minicamp is now done for the rookies. Pretty soon, next week, the OTAs begin. So, Mara, what do we have right now for text questions? Because we're taking your text questions at 710-710.
509 says, Professor, if you were the GM of the Mariners, what's the number one move you would make to improve the team?
Right now, I just kind of play the waiting game and then see what's available in the next month for starting pitching, because you can see there's right now a big question mark for the fifth starter with Erasmo Ramirez hurt. You know, they still have the options with Wade LeBlanc, and then they can bring up Ariel Miranda. But I still think that would be the one thing that, you know, if you can pick up a good starting pitcher, that would make things that much better.
All right, Professor, the 909 wants to know, is there really enough interest in basketball in this area to get an NBA team here?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, because it was robbed because there was so much interest before it left, and I think that interest is still there. Sure, there's going to be some angry people that the fact that the NBA has been away for so long, but I mean, I know the crowds were bad the last year, but when you're already saying that you're going to move, that was a strategy to try to allow this move to happen. And so, no, I think that there's definitely enough, and I think you can see the interest. I mean, did anybody anticipate that with the opening of the hockey sales, that they could sell out in, what was it, 13 minutes, 12 minutes or something like that, you know, sell out all the available options as far as, you know, whether it's the 500 or the 1,000 to put down money. In this case, I mean, the NBA would get even more of a response. Now, NBA, I think, has great interest coming back, and I think everybody's looking forward to that.
909 wants to know, would Doug Baldwin be a number one receiver on most teams?
Maybe. I'd say, well, probably about 3/4 of them. Yeah, because, I mean, if you look at some of the things that he does, he doesn't drop the ball. His percentage of catches has been in the best, I think, since 2011 or something like that. I mean, he's a great route runner. Sure, I know that, you know, slot guys don't get the total respect, but he gets great respect because he runs routes so well. I mean, you know, what he's doing right now is starting to be very similar. Now, I'm not saying he's going to go into the Hall of Fame. He's not, to what Steve Largent did when he was, you know, the number one receiver for this team. He runs good routes. He's able to get away and separate. He catches the ball so well. He's smart. I mean, I think that probably, you know, he could be number one on 3/4 of the teams.
360 says, John, how do you see the NFC East shaking out, ranking them 1 through 4 this year? And will the Cowboys make the playoffs with a full season of Zeke?
Okay, I say Philadelphia would be number one. Dallas would be number two. I would say Washington number three. And I think Dallas could still make it as a wild card. And then the Giants number four. You know, I think that they're certainly going to be helped by Saquon Barkley. I'm wondering if their defense is going to slip a little bit because, you know, they made the big moves at free agency a couple years ago. That was fine. But then you start to look and say, okay, are they really going to be that good? Because I think there's going to be a drop off on the defensive line. And I wonder how they're going to adjust to a 3-4 scheme. A little concerned about that. So I think, say the Giants right now would be number four.
Right. The 509 says, yo, Professor Penny, early reports are saying new offensive coordinator Schottenheimer is polar opposite of Bevel. How do you think Russell will handle this? And do you think the offense will go through some growing pains in its first
season? No, I think it's going to be fine because I think that Russell will take direction. I mean, I think he's going to be, you know, because Brian's going to try to give him good plays and give him good plays to execute. And, you know, what Russell wants to do is take good plays and make them win. And so if he can come up with strong suggestions and strong ways to do it, it's not like Russell's some selfish guy that, you know, wants to show off and run around and make plays. I mean, he does that to try to win games. And I think that you can see over the last couple years that, you know, he's usually very cautious in the first two quarters and three quarters of the game. And then when the game starts to go on the line and he's needed, then he starts to really open it up and then does his thing. So, no, I think he's going to work well with Brian Schottenheimer.
Oh, 425 has a strategy for the Mariners. They want to know, why can't we just walk Mike Trout whenever we face him?
Might be a thought, because, you know, you don't want to do that all the time, but you don't want to give him good pitches. And, of course, I mean, if he's the best player in baseball, which I think most people is, I mean, I think you have to consider some of those thoughts.
253 says, good morning, John. What overall grade would you give the Hawks on this year's draft?
I'd give it a B minus, because, again, it's not going to be a sexy one, because they took a lot of players that, you know, maybe not would fit the mold of all that. But what you like is it fits what they needed. And that's why I give them the good grade. You know, they get a running back. You know, they get a defensive end who can pass rush and help out at defensive tackle as a pass rusher. You know, they get a great punter. He looks sensational. A seventh round quarterback who might challenge for the backup job. They got a blocking tight end. I mean, they fit what they were looking for. They got a tackle. They can try to develop. I like this draft.
360 says, what do the Mariners have to achieve to be talked about the same as the Hawks around here?
I think that's going to be hard. I guess go to a World Series. Because if you're a winner, and of course winning does that, and you see how popular this team became, you know, when it was in the late 90s and early 20s, I mean, it was fantastic. I mean, it was talked about all the time. You know, it was, the crowds were all there, and you know, it's a good baseball town, but again, football still remains king. But again, a great baseball team would do it. Unfortunately, you know, they can maybe make the playoffs as a wild card, so that's going to be tough to go to the World Series. But a World Series, I think, would have a chance to do it. Whether they win the World Series or not, that would generate a lot of fans.
Eric from the 206 wants to know if there are any decent free agent offensive linemen still out there.
Not many, no. I mean, it wasn't a great year for offensive linemen in free agency anyways. Yeah, I mean, there was a couple, maybe a handful of guys, and you saw they all got big money, but not a lot out there. I guess maybe, do you want Luke Jokel back? He's available.
I don't think they do.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I'm going to go ahead and answer that one.
Okay.
The 909 wants to know, is Pete against big-bodied wide receivers?
No, he's very much in favor of big body wide receivers. That's always been one of the things that he likes. It's just finding the right ones to kind of fit the system. I mean, you remember, you go back to Mike Williams, and you go back, I mean, all through college he was having the big wide receiver. I mean, and so, no, he's a big proponent of that.
The 360 wants to know, does any active player have a chance to break Brett Favre's consecutive start streak?
I guess maybe Eli Manning, because he's never missed a start. So I guess if he can continue playing like that, he can certainly challenge it. But that's going to be so hard.
Well, then benching him counts, doesn't it?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you're right. He lost it because of the benching. Yeah,
not his doing, but...
Yeah, no, that's a great point, because, again, that does take away that streak and cost probably Ben McAdoo his job.
Well, Ben McAdoo messed more things up than just the team. He messed up for Eli.
No, he did not do it. No.
360 says, question, will there ever be another clipboard Jesus?
I'm sure somebody will come along like that, but you know, Interception Jesus and Charlie Whitehurst is one that is just so memorable and meant so much to this franchise. And again, it taught the franchise, it's like, okay, keep churning quarterbacks until you get one that you like, and they got one that they like in Russell Wilson.
206 wants to know if the Hawks should have traded Sherman last year.
No. Absolutely not. Again, they wanted to go for it, as they plan to every year. But, you know, why break this group up? And again, you know, they weren't going to get the true value. Yeah, if they would have got a number one and number four, then you would have considered it. But no, I think that it was best to keep Richard Sherman, because he still gave them a chance to get back. And still, it was close. I know this team did not perform anywhere close to where it probably should have last year, but it still was in a 9-win team that could have won 12 with a couple field goals.
206 says, JC, do you see defensive coordinator Ken Norton making a lot of changes?
Not a lot of changes. I think it's just going to be, you know, more, I think, his voice and how he wants to, you know, command things and all that. But no, in fact, if you go back to what Pete Carroll said consistently through the offseason, the schemes are going to stay the same. It's still going to be cover one. It's still going to be cover three. You know, they're still going to have, you know, two linebackers in there in nickel situations. There may be a little bit more versatility as far as some of the rotations of the guys on the defensive line. But no, it's still the same defense. It's just going to be, I think, coached with more emotion.
All right, that's it for text today, Professor.
Okay, and you can check out the show in the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. And the Mariners have taken on Toronto today. The Blue Jays at 3 on the pregame, 4 as far as the start. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
And joining us right now is Dave Grosby. And Dave, I was kind of thinking out of the box today, kind of, you know, reflecting a little bit on some of the stuff we're hearing on Russell Wilson and what his agent Mark Rogers is going to do. And do you really think that they would take the strategy of doing the two franchise tags and losing millions of dollars over a 2-3 year period by not doing some kind of a contract extension?
In a word, no.
Mm-hmm.
What about you?
I mean, I wouldn't question Mark Rogers for trying it, because I think he's always thinking as a baseball agent, I've got to do something different because I know baseball and baseball does things differently. But that would be the silliest notion in the world, because think about the numbers. If he would do the franchise tag. Now, remember, Matt Ryan just got $30 million a year. Aaron Rodgers is going to get close to 32 once he gets a deal done. And we're talking about big money up front. So, like, for example, a check was written for $46.5 million for Matt Ryan. Mm-hmm. If you have a franchise tag with Russell Wilson, he makes a little over 25 next year, or in 2020, and 30 in 2022. How crazy would that be? I mean, you know, Matt Ryan would make more money this year, basically, than you know, the 2 years of franchise tags for him, just to try to get that third franchise tag and have the chance to be a free agent.
Who do you think's floating the idea?
Mark Rogers.
Yeah?
Yeah. Because, I mean, as soon as the Ryan contract, I mean, if you notice, I think Pro Football Focus has had, well, no, what I think was it Ian Rappaport or somebody had the first one that, well, you know, Russell Wilson's people were upset that they were looking at Josh Allen, the quarterback, and flew to Wyoming, where all it was that, you got a GM and John Snyder, who checks out every quarterback, and then he had a chance to do it and for a game at Wyoming or something like that during the season. So he wanted to go see him, and there was no big deal. There was no way that they were going to get him, because he was going to be, you know, a top 10 pick, and you can't trade up to Seattle without a 2 and a 3. So that wasn't going to happen. And so they made a big deal out of that. And then as soon as the Ryan contract came out, Pro Football Talk came out, and people close to Russell Wilson are saying, hey, he may go the franchise route. And it's like, so you have to think it's coming from Mark Rogers.
I guess so, but like you lined it out, it doesn't make much sense to think that he would do it that way.
No.
I think it makes more sense for the Seahawks to try and get it done as soon as they can, though.
It would, but I think that's going to be difficult because they don't really have the cap resources this year to try to escalate something like that. I mean, you know, they can do it, but I think it's just going to be I think it's better to do it next year.
What are they going to do with Dwayne Brown, by the way?
They'll restructure his contract, get some kind of an extension.
Okay.
He's making, what, $9.75 this year, and they'll probably do some kind of a 2-year deal. It would be something similar to the things that they've done, you know, with Cam Chancellor and Michael Bennett and that. You know, they probably won't give too much on guarantees, but, you know, they'll give them a little bit more money and they'll save a little bit of cap room. But cap-wise, they're okay right now. You know, with Averill now coming off the books, I mean, they go from like 7-2 to 14. So that doesn't include, you know, the Byron Maxwell deal, which is probably around 2. And it also does not include some of the draft choice signings they've had.
Okay.
But again, cap economics, I love that stuff.
Well, you're good at it, John.
Well, I appreciate that.
You've always been good at it.
I always like that. I mean, again, that's why I kind of figured that ultimately what's sitting there for Russell Wilson is like about 1% under what Aaron Rodgers gets, because I think they'd be generous enough to take that into account, because I did the last time. Aaron Rodgers was the highest paid at 22. You know, they made Russell number 2 at 21.9. So if you know, what I think that it's going to be for Aaron Rodgers, 31.75. If that's the case, it's going to be 31.65 or 31.7, which isn't a bad chunk of change for Russell Wilson.
How long a deal will Aaron Rodgers do?
I'd say 3 or 4.
Okay.
I think what it comes down to is that, you know, if it's going to be more signing bonus money or they're going to try to stretch it out. But, you know, he's starting to get up there in age, but I think probably 4 years. Because, again, he's still under contract. It's just that, you know, he's up for another one, and you know he's going to get it.
What do you think about the Tom Brady discussion?
Well, I think they need to float him a little bit more money because Tom Brady is now the 16th highest paid quarterback in football.
Wow.
And so, you know, I think that his outfit looked bad the other day.
Yeah.
I mean, that was just horrendous.
You ever been to the Met Gala, John?
I have never been in the Met Gala.
Okay.
I've never. Have you ever been to a any kind of those
fashion show?
Fashion shows?
Yes, I have.
I've been to one, I think.
Yeah, they're interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Very interesting.
Not necessarily my cup of tea, but interesting.
No. It's not one that I would say, oh, on the bucket list, I've got to get to another one. So
no,
I
got to
make my bucket list. That's just not on the agenda. Don't see that. But no, that's kind of interesting. All right, so the NBA is really kind of getting into focus here. I mean, it's like not a lot of drama as we wait what's going to be Boston going against Cleveland. Cleveland,
yep.
Of course, definitely getting in. And then you have Houston going up against Golden State, and Golden State could probably wrap things up tonight.
They both can wrap things up tonight, as a matter of fact. Houston's got a 3-1 lead in their series. They're playing tonight as well, and that's the expectation. And this was what everyone would have predicted at the start of the year.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Maybe San Antonio in the mix, but at the start of the year, you would have said it's going to be Houston, and after the moves they made with Chris Paul, and Golden State playing for the Western Conference Finals, and Boston, even though you didn't know Gordon Hayward was going to get hurt, but with Kyrie Irving, Boston And the Cavaliers. It's a little more surprising with Boston with dealing with the injuries that they have, but it's amazing of the lack of drama, yet it hasn't hurt the ratings. We talked about this in your Saturday show.
Yeah.
It's not impacting the league at all that it's been this predictable.
No, it really hasn't. And that's what I'm kind of wondering is that can Boston do it minus two of their best players?
Well, they're getting there, it looks like. But no, I don't think they can beat Cleveland, to answer your question.
Yeah. I'm still amazed that I thought Cleveland was toast because they looked so off in that first series, and all of a sudden, thanks to LeBron, they're starting to click.
Big time, and actually the guys on LeBron's bench, well, I'm not going to call it their bench, the other starters, actually had big games yesterday, and it may spell doom for our friend Dwayne Casey.
Yeah.
He's already reporting Toronto saying that they're looking to move on from him, which to me would be the classic mistake teams make. Getting
mm-hmm.
tired of winning. I mean, I understand that it's frustrating to lose to LeBron every year. Everyone loses to LeBron every year, except for the Warriors a couple of times in the finals. They had the best record in the league. They won 59 games, and to think that someone else can do better is nonsense. But it looks like Toronto's going to pull the trigger on that move.
Yeah, I know. That's why I know we were talking about that during the report card because Dwayne had kind of a real benign type of silly response saying, well, you know, That's LeBron, and a couple years down the line or whatever, it's like, you know, something like once LeBron gets old, then we'd have a chance to really pass him. But I don't think. Now, is he going to get the coach of the year? Because I think there's a chance he could get coach of the year and fired.
Yeah, wouldn't that be something? I think there's a pretty good chance of that, too.
Mm-hmm.
He won't be unemployed for very long, though.
No. He did such a great job. I mean,
yeah, he did a fantastic job. They had the best record in the East.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, the fact they can't get past the Cavaliers is frustrating, like I said, but. But I mean, to decide that, well, you know, another coach can do it is crazy.
Yeah, no,
it's
I
not
agree
coaching;
with that.
It's LeBron James.
Mm-hmm. No, and he is playing. I think he's playing his best basketball. I've never seen him play this well.
Yeah, he's the phenom of phenoms. There's no question about that.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It's like, how do you size up Golden State versus Houston?
Well, I mean, Houston's still got a lot to prove. Like we pointed out, yeah. James Harden still hasn't played a big time playoff game, but. They were a 65-win team this year. They're coming in fairly healthy. It should be an interesting series, but you got Curry's got his legs under him right now. The Warriors have also got a certain kind of charisma going for them as well, and I think that one has a chance to be a better series than the Cavaliers series does.
Mm-hmm.
I think Cleveland's going to win fairly easily. The Warriors they're at risk with the Rockets, but it's up to James Harden to make a step that he hadn't made yet in his career.
Right, yeah. And I know that Houston's played better defense. I mean, last year, they didn't play defense at all in the playoffs. They were horrible.
Well, and Harden really had a bad, when it really counted, they really had a bad game, and they added to their mix. I mean, this was the whole point of it this year, was for this series. It should be a great one.
Mm-hmm. No, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And again, the interest in NBA continues to grow, and I think that's great. I think it's going to be good for ratings. I think it's going to be good for series. And it's good to see in a sport where you have your best teams merge at the right time and get into the finals. Where, you know, but again, you hope there's going to be some better games.
Well, there have been some good ones, but I hear. I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying. Hey, I agree with you.
So what's on Bob Grouse and Tom today?
We're talking to Michael Bradley today. We're hoping to visit with a Mariner here right before the start of the game today as well.
Okay, that'll be fantastic. Bob Grouse and Tom coming up next. I'll be back tomorrow at 10. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.